B-Pod Studios.
So, this is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I don't get it. I'd love to be an offensive coordinator here. If I have Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, and there's Baker Mayfield. Yeah, I know he's overrated as hell. But
whoa!
I'm like this. I bought into the dang hype.
Right.
You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. But, you know, not to the point where everybody's saying he's going to be the league MVP.
What are you seeing that he's not doing right now? What's he doing wrong?
You know, what's he doing right, Greeny? Because I'm going to look at this. Here's a guy right now that is a one-read guy, and then he's going to improvise. He's got to realize you are one of the slowest guys on that field when you take off with it, okay?
Yep.
The other thing, the ball's not coming out in rhythm. You're staring down guys, and you're not that accurate down the field.
I appreciate his opinion and all that, but he's not in our building. He has no idea what we're doing. So I'd answer that with that. Is he a one-read quarterback? No, he's not. I mean, that's asinine to even say. Contrary to popular belief, we're not that far away.
Whatever. In the wise words of Freddie Kitchens, if you don't wear orange and brown, you don't matter. And Rex Ryan doesn't have any colors right now for a reason. You know, I think it's something that you have to be conscious of because you're surrounded in an environment where you hear a lot of things. Stuff pops up on your phone. Stuff's on the TV. I mean, it's just people talk. And so you just have to make a conscious decision to protect your locker room and take care of your guys and block out the negative stuff. And, you know, when they're patting you on the back, that's to me, that's even worse.
So this team's already in real trouble. The Cleveland Browns, the overhyped darlings heading into the season. This typically does happen, I feel like, though. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports. I'm just, you know, I think the overarching theme of today's show is just talking about some of the stupid things in sports that we've seen. I feel like I've seen all week. This is one of the dumber weeks in sports that I can remember. And going back to the Monday night game, the loss to the Cleveland Browns at home against the L.A. Rams. Was the LA Rams, right?
Yeah. It was the Los Angeles Rams,
like
2 weeks
ago now.
Yes.
And despite the poor play, shocker, by Jared Goff, the Browns lose at home because the play calling by Freddie Kitchens, the head coach that was handpicked by Baker Mayfield, because he feels comfortable with him for whatever reason, even though the guy has like little to no offensive background outside of being a running backs coach, and he was a quarterback at Alabama a million years ago in the 90s. So this guy now has turned Baker Mayfield, who I think I loved in college, loved at Oklahoma. I loved how he flashed last year. I can understand why there was hype, especially when they add Odell Beckham Jr. They get some real talent defensively, I feel like, Chris, as well. They've looked okay on that side of the ball, and they have Steve Wilks there as their D coordinator, who was the head coach last year in Arizona. But this is a mess because the offense now is, it feels like a 27-step drop for Baker Mayfield, roll to the right, and streaks. It's like when you play someone that doesn't really know what they're doing in Madden, and all they ever pick is like Hail Mary or streak plays.
Yeah.
That's all it feels like is happening with the Cleveland offense. And part of this is on Mayfield, too, because he definitely wants to try to roll out and make, you know, make the, it feels like he just is trying to make a more exciting type of play.
He's trying to make hero plays. The same thing you said about Josh Allen.
Yeah, stand in the pocket. Like, I know their offensive line isn't that great, and, you know, if you watch the Monday night game, you remember this, but there was times, if he just stepped up in the pocket, you could make a play. Even if you make a play, you know, when they're down at the goal line and they blew it, he could have done a quarterback draw and gone right into the end zone.
Yeah.
And Felger and Maz half-jokingly were saying this week, like, there needs to be a league intervention here. Like, Freddie Kitchens is in over his head for Baker Mayfield to say there from the chirping from Rex Ryan, and that's what you heard at the beginning of that clip, in the wise words of Freddie Kitchens. The wise words of Freddie Kitchens? No one in life has ever said that. In the wise, the wise words of Freddie Kitchens, pull my finger. I'm feeling extra, extra cheese. Like, he's just a big dummy. Like, this guy has no business being a head coach of this team. And I thought because of the big egos and the big personalities in that locker room, he'd have issues. But that isn't it at all, Chris. Like, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's doing. The offense there is a mess. And I know you kind of enjoy it because you're not a Baker Mayfield
guy.
Not.
And I also think you're putting too much of it on the coach and not enough of it on the quarterback.
But this, don't you think this is a hit for the league, though? I mean, in a negative way. Like, this team needed to be good this year, and they look anything but.
Yeah, I guess you could argue that. I mean, the league will survive always because it's the NFL. But, yeah, it would have been a great story, and I think this was a team that was really hyped up, but to me, it's kind of like that Philadelphia Eagles dream team. Like, what year was that, 2012 or whatever?
Oh, 2011.
2011, with those guys, it's kind of the same thing. Like, don't believe the hype, and I didn't believe it either. You know, look, Baker Mayfield played well last year. I have to admit, he really did, and he has a lot of potential. But I think that whole organization, that whole team, and I think it starts, I feel like a lot of times your organization will take on the demeanor of your quarterback, right? And so Baker Mayfield's demeanor is that he's not humble. He always has all the answers. He embraces the hype when it's around himself. He doesn't really think he has to pay his dues. He's tremendously cocky. And I think that's what you see from the whole organization, from the head coach, the quarterback, the whole team.
Yeah, and so
they think they're owed something that they haven't earned yet.
And so one of the things I'm starting to wonder about him, as much as I liked him, is, you know, again, Freddie Kitchens was his guy. It's who he went to ownership and management and said, this is. So that to me is kind of a red flag. So does that mean you don't want to, you're not going to take the hard coaching?
You don't
want to
be coached.
Yeah. And that feels like, oh boy, like, you know, you're.
And when I say that, like, I think he wants to be coached, but what he probably doesn't want is someone trying to change his style of play or somebody who, like, his interpretation of coaching and maybe what our interpretation would be are probably different. I do think he probably wants to be coached. He wants to learn. He wants knowledge, but he doesn't want someone to come in there and be like, Baker, I need to change your whole game because this isn't going to work long term in the NFL.
If you had to redraft from some of those quarterbacks, from Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Mayfield, who goes one, Darnold, Rosen, how would you redraft that? Who would you take first?
I think I would take Darnold. You know, I think in the right situation, if he's healthy, that I still think he's the guy that profiles the best as a long-term NFL quarterback. Lamar Jackson has surprised me, you know, with his ability, his accuracy. We'll see how long that lasts, but he can definitely throw it. But I'd still put Mayfield, I think, second there. And then Lamar Jackson, and then Josh Allen. Did I miss someone?
Rosen. Yeah.
I liked Rosen. So, you know,
I feel like he's just been in bad situations.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I would put Rosen ahead of Josh Allen. I think the Bills would be better off with Rosen than Josh Allen. I really do. I think if he's, like, even the end of that Patriots game, he made some throws that I was like, ooh.
Right.
That's
like he should have started the game.
Yeah. He's just been in horrible situations.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it would be Darnold. It's just that feels like it's already going sideways because he's a New York Jet.
Yeah.
I'm like, mono. Do you get that past 16? Like, that's just. Feels
like, when you're dating those 18-year-old models, I mean, that's probably what he's doing. They're close to his age. That's probably what's happening. He's doing the full Sanchez down there. You know, he's out in the Chelsea with the models. He's doing the model scene.
Coach. I can't make prom. Too much pound town. Ken in New Haven. You are next on Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Good.
First time, long time. I've been to Orchard Park and was pelted with beer cans in the parking lot, chest bumped by this ginormous guy when I got in the stadium, and then spilt a little beer on someone, and it was almost ejected from the stadium, but the group of Bills fans behind me defended me, and I got to watch the rest of the game.
So were you wearing Patriots gear, Ken?
Oh, yeah, it's on Brady jersey.
Yeah, and so this is, and thanks for the call. So this is one of the reasons, because, you know, again, I'm out of pocket when I do this. Like, you know, I'm still a fan of the team. I don't, many of you might not believe that. Like, why are you so critical?
Oh,
why
no,
are you saying bad things about Brady?
He has the credit card to prove it,
yeah,
folks.
It's true, yeah. So I do these road games out of pocket, but there's certain places I wouldn't wear the gear because, not fear for my life, I just don't want to deal with anything. And Buffalo is one of those places. That's one of the reasons I haven't really wanted to go. Because even if I'm not going to wear, like, the jersey and get all, you know, gussied up, I'll still wear a hat. And I just feel like Buffalo, like, you know, because I don't want to pay through the nose for, like, great seats. So I'm going to probably sit in the 300s. And there you're kind of asking for trouble. And I've heard too many stories of kind of like that, like, I don't know, you just slightly bump someone because you're trying to go take a leak or whatever, and all of a sudden it's like World War III. And, like, I don't want to deal with
that.
Yeah,
I've never had anything bad like that, but, I mean, they will sort of catcall even the Patriots media. Like, they really they really hate the Patriots. It's like they feel like their oppressors have, like, rolled in, you know? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like,
yeah.
Right? And there's all this pent-up resentment and frustration over everything that's happened the last 19 years, and they really feel like it's very personal for them. You know, it's like somebody who's been holding a boot to your neck for 19 years. That's what they feel like, and it's like you want to strike back and you want to lash out, and then normally they lose, so they're all liquored up and they're all upset that they lost, and it's a bad combination.
Yeah, so I knew a handful of guys that went that last time the Patriots lost there in 2011, the shootout, the Fitzpatrick game, and they felt like we got to get out of here because we're going to get burned at the stake.
Yeah,
like it was real problematic.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, I don't know, I'm intrigued because that Bills Mafia, I find them extremely entertaining. Blowing themselves up with fireworks, jumping through the tables that are on fire, and just all the liquor-fueled antics.
If you had to watch that team for this many years, you'd light yourself on fire, too.
True. But I don't know. I just haven't pulled the trigger there. I want to make it more of a refined experience over a 2 or 3 day period. The day trip to go there, it just feels like too much.
Here's what you got to do real quick before you take this call. You got to drive up there, right? Bert Breer and I did this 1 year. Our flight got canceled. We had to drive up there. We drove up there. We drove like out of our way and stopped at Dinosaur Barbecue.
Oh, which is great.
Which is fantastic. Ate that. Continued on our way. The Dinosaur Barbecue alone, we went to the Syracuse one, alone was worth the trip.
All right. Well, duly noted. What you do. David Medford, as we were talking about the Cleveland Browns, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in on this Browns bashing. I just think it's hilarious. They had such a great, like, a great offseason, and then first half, their fans boo them off the field. Like, they're not even a half into the season. They get booed off the field only down 12-6 and then implode in the second half. It's just ridiculous, like, how overhyped they, even the fan base, everyone's become. I mean, they really just got to settle down.
Oh, Dave, and they bought it. They bought it into it. They took the cheese hard. I mean, because this was a lot of national hype. Like, you know, locally, you're going to get it anyway, no matter where your team is. But, you know, this was a team that was, you know, they're going to compete in the AFC. They're going to be in the playoffs. And it already looks like, no, they're lost. And Baker Mayfield looks like, oh, my God, they've already ruined him, or he's ruined himself. Any other quick thoughts on some of the other young quarterback play over the last couple of weeks? Because it does feel like what, you know, because Felger was saying it was a good week for the league because you had Daniel Jones end up looking really good for the Giants. They go down into Tampa and win that game. Gardner Minshew looks like he can play. So, I don't know. Do you feel like the league has kind of corrected itself after all these big injuries? And don't forget the other one that I thought was huge for the league, New Orleans going into Seattle.
Yeah, that was big to see New Orleans win that game. Yeah, no, I mean, I think Daniel Jones was the takeaway for me. I saw him in the preseason game against the Patriots, and I was like, man, he's not bad. Like, he can make some throws there. And I was not in favor of that pick, but he was really impressive. And I think maybe a lot of people are going to owe Dave Gettleman an apology. And if you have a quarterback like that, if he is what he looks like he can be in the New York market, and you have Darnold, and Darnold can get straightened out, if you have two quality quarterbacks in that market, that's good for the league.
Yeah, that was a guy, I think you and I were the majority there. Like, this is who you're taking? Was it sixth overall?
I thought he was a little Jay Cutler-ish, but he's not. I mean, he's really accurate. He makes good decisions, good athlete. He looks good.
Yeah, so good week for the league, or was it, though? Because we've still seen some hideous officiating, and I want to touch on some of the play calling from the Thursday night game. Get your thoughts on that, because I know you feel pretty strongly about the pass interference thing, too. So we'll get to that next year. Gasper Murray, you want to join us? 617-779-0985.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Packers have two left. They did not run the ball the last time they were knocking on the door with a first and goal from the one. Second down in the air and picked off by Brada. Philadelphia will take over.
All right, so that was the pick that sealed it in Green Bay on Thursday night. Entertaining game. Packers lose for the first time this year to the Philadelphia Eagles, who, while I've jumped off that bandwagon and they were going to be my NFC representative in the Super Bowl, they do play good when their backs are against the wall. I'll give them that.
Yes, they do. Got to give it up to them for that.
Front seven's great, but boy, that secondary stinks. But be that as it may, your thoughts on this game, some of the play calling I thought was atrocious. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the Browns and how their head coach, Freddie Kitchens, feels like he's in over his head.
Yeah.
This Matt LaFleur, the guy who was the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator last year, like, how does he end up as a head coach of the Green Bay Packers? But that's another guy that feels like, to me, is in over his head. Some of the play calling there as the Packers get down into the red zone and on the one a couple of times late in that fourth quarter, and they blow it, and they don't even hand it off once. Okay, maybe some of that's on Aaron Rodgers.
I was going to say, I wonder, because after the game, like, LaFleur was like, good question. I couldn't tell if he was that was self-flagellation or he was pretty much like, the other guy changed the play.
Right, with the question being, like, why didn't you run it there? Good question. So, okay, maybe some of it's on Rodgers. But that still feels like it's that offense is Rodgers improvising, making a big play, and, you know, the rest, there's nothing really.
I mean, Davante Adams getting knocked out of that game was huge because he was lighting it up, and that hurt the Packers, and the Packers couldn't run. So they got exposed in two areas, their re-engineered run game and then obviously their reconfigured defense. Both of those failed on Thursday night, and that's why they lost that game. And, you know, the other thing obviously was the officiating, you know, which is a bigger issue. It's a league-wide issue with this pass interference thing, and I thought that what should have been a pass interference call.
On Valdez-Scantling.
Valdez-Scantling, yeah. I thought that he earned that pass interference call. It was clear to me. It was clear and obvious contact to the head and neck area, which is a real point of emphasis from a safety standpoint for the league. And so for me, for that alone, they should have been able to look at that and say, okay, this one's interference. But instead, they just want to bury their heads in the sand and act like they don't have this rule that they never wanted in the first place.
Yeah, I just don't understand what they're doing. And someone could correct me, or maybe you can. Like, through these 3 weeks in one game,
yeah,
it feels like they haven't overturned anything.
They have overturned a few. Like, Pete Carroll got one in Seattle. A few weeks ago, like, it was not called on the field. He threw the flag and he got it. So they've changed a few, but by and large, I think that, and I said this before to you, I feel like the problem here, there are two problems here. It's twofold. One, they have a rule they never wanted. Sean Payton's on the competition committee and he rammed this rule through for his own purposes when it wasn't ready. I'm not saying the idea isn't good, but it wasn't ready. It had not been crystallized to a point where it could be functional, and he rammed it through anyway because he was still resentful about the NFC Championship game and Nickell Robey-Coleman and what happened there. So they ram it through. And then you have Riveron, who's, you know, either too liberal or too literal with everything. Remember when he put out the officiating video and was telling you Stephon Gilmore arm-barring Brandon Cooks?
In the Super Bowl would
be a penalty now under this rule? And I feel like people at 345 Park Avenue are like, oh, my God, this idiot. We have to tamp him down. So he got the message, you know, compliant soldier that, you know, reverse him all Riveron is. He says, okay, so you don't want me to call any. So now he's gone the opposite way. He's done a 180 from where he was on the catch rule. When he overturned that one here when Kelvin Benjamin, when it was just like he was completely liberal with it. He's like, if I see anything, I'm changing it. Now it's like, and I made this joke, and I'll continue to make this joke until somebody watches this movie. It's like the beginning of The Last Boy Scout to get this penalty called. You got to run out there with the firearm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and shoot the guy to have it overturned. And that's just ridiculous. I think it's embarrassing for the league. You either have a rule or you don't. You can't pretend that you don't have a rule. And then on top of it, they have the wrong guy making these decisions. This is a guy who tends to lean towards, you know, extremes of ineptitude. Again, he either is inept in the fact that he's too liberal with it. It's too far reaching. He's looking to make the changes too much, or he goes in the other direction and he's too obstinate and he won't make any changes, because there's a happy gray area here for somebody that has good judgment. But this guy doesn't have good judgment.
It's just that one on Valdez-Scantling was clear pass interference.
Yeah, it was.
And that they didn't reverse that one, it just left me feeling like, oh, they're not going to change anything. Like, yeah, this is just stupid. Why do they even have this? And do you think it'll be gone next year?
I do. It's on a trial basis. It's only in for 1 year. And I think they'll just get rid of it. They'll say it was too problematic, and they'll just move on. And they'll just put the onus on the officials not to miss calls like the one they missed in the NFC Championship game.
Owen in Cambridge on this game on Thursday night. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that hit that was set on Williams, the way that Bragdon held him up, turned his helmet with his head.
I can't even hear you.
I was going to say, that was from a submarine.
Yeah,
right?
Remove the pillow in front of your mouth the next time you call. If you want to try back, 617-779-0985. Hello, Jared.
Hey, guys. How are you? Big fan of the show. Just quick on Rosen. Gaffer, I think you said it. I like you said, bad situation. He hasn't really been given the tools to succeed. Flores is down there trying to make a culture change. I get it. I want the kid to succeed. He has the tools to do so, but, you know, bad situation. But Gardner Minshew, I feel like he's a guy we're just now, like, where this guy come from? He's a Mike Leach product from Washington State. He shows up to work, does his job. Great guy. He's like a Baker Mayfield light, a couple of analysts have said. Fun guy to watch. And they got the ponies down there in Jacksonville to get it done. I think he's, you know, a fun young quarterback to watch. And I just want to hear what you guys think of what he's been doing down there so far. Thank you.
Going back to that couple of Thursdays ago, he threw some dimes in that win over
Tennessee. Jim Murray special.
Yeah. He looked all right. And I like the story and like his whole style and everything. And he's, you know, they're already doing the promos on ESPN with him and Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. You haven't seen these?
I haven't seen him.
You know that movie, right?
No, I do know the movie.
Uncle Rico is like, I could throw that football over the mountains. Like, his style is kind of like Uncle Rico, and they have the actor who played him, like, doing all these promos and stuff.
Cool.
It's kind of fun.
That's pretty cool.
But, yeah, he was, I think, at East Carolina, like, toiling for years. Really didn't do all that much.
Was going to transfer to Alabama to basically be a backup because he thought he wanted to go into coaching, wanted to learn from Saban.
And Mike Leach at Washington State. Wazoo was like, come play for me, you'll throw for a billion yards and a million touchdowns. And it's essentially just that's what happened.
Yeah.
So sixth-round draft pick. It'd be kind of a cool story. They were my dark horse in the AFC. I thought they'd squeak in, maybe get like 10 wins. I believe in Nick Foles, reluctantly. I thought that defense would be better. I certainly didn't think Jalen Ramsey would be trying to force his way off the team. But that's all kind of gone to hell. But after that Thursday night game and Minshew flashed a little bit, maybe they still have something there.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be a great story for the league, and Jacksonville definitely needs some stability at quarterback. You know, we'll see. Obviously, it stinks that the first game Foles played, you know, he gets hurt and he's on IR. I look at Minshew and I'm like, he's everything you like. I mean, he looks like he stepped out of the 70s. He has that mustache. He plays on a team that should never be in nationally televised games, but you'll still watch them when they are in those nationally televised games. It's like tailor-made for Jim Murray, the whole thing.
Andrew in Medford on this Thursday night game of the Packers play calling. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Jim. I watch the Packers casually just because I think they're less of a clown franchise than most of the NFL. And I think Matt LaFleur and the Packers this year is a great example of a team that should be good has a coach that is just not making the right choices and they look bad because of it. I heard someone bring up the fact that Matt LaFleur tried to do a kind of like running back by committee thing in Tennessee, even though Derrick Henry was clearly a better running back, and it seems like he's doing the same thing this year. And it's hard to watch NFL games that aren't the Patriots, and it's not really a homer thing. It's just a head coaching thing. The decision-making is horrible.
Oh, Andrew, that's maybe my bigger takeaway from that game more than anything else. It shows you how the gap between Belichick and everybody else and the coaches in the league is just, it's massive. And, you know, what they've done with the Philadelphia Eagles
Doug Peterson.
Yeah, Doug Peterson, I was going to say, surfer dad with the stupid visor. Surfer dad. You know, that team plays well when their back's against the wall. Their game, obviously, they, you know, one-upped Belichick in that Super Bowl a couple of years ago. But
even them, like Jim Schwartz, like you look at that team, it's like, okay, you know you have no corners, right? Oh, you're just going to pressure? You're going to play man-to-man. That looks like a blitz. Why are you leaving that guy on an island? Devontae Adams is destroying him. Like, do you see what's happening here?
Go back to their last game against the Falcons, where it was an all-out zero blitz, where he doesn't have the, you know, doesn't have the horses in the secondary. So you're going to blitz on third down against Julio, and Julio Jones is one-on-one. There's the pancake block, sets him free, and he goes for the game-winning touchdown. Like, I don't know. That guy failed as a head coach in Detroit for a reason. Like, he's good at times if he has the ponies to do it with, but it just feels like it's blitz after blitz after blitz, and he gets burned time and time again. So there's some bad coaching you saw there Thursday night as well. It's Belichick, precipitous drop, everybody else. You maybe want to try to make a case for Pete or Andy Reid, fine. But even those guys have their massive flaws. All right, we'll continue our tour of stupidity in sports this week. Let's get to Kyrie Irving and his press conference yesterday, huh? This guy, the oracle, the all-knowing Kyrie, finally spoke as a member of the Brooklyn Nets. We'll get to that coming up after the Sports Up headlines here with Tim McCone.
This is Jasper and Murray.
You listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
For, I believe you know, after the Phoenix game, I went to my grandfather's memorial, and he passed on October 23rd, and after he passed, basketball was the last thing on my mind. So a lot of basketball and the joy I had from it was sucked away from me, and there was a facial expression that I carried around with me throughout the year. Didn't allow anyone to get close to me in that instance, and it really bothered me, and I didn't take the necessary steps to get counseling or get therapy or anything to deal with someone that close to me dying. I've never dealt with anything like that.
Well, there he is, the all-knowing oracle, Kyrie Irving. I found this cheap. So, and what was, I feel like, a dumber week than usual in sports, locally and nationally. We've touched on most of it. All the hype for the Bills in general. Some of the stuff going on with Tom Brady, how he feels miffed that Antonio Brown's no longer here. It's time we focus on Kyrie Irving, because he has learned nothing. And to use his grandfather's passing as the excuse for why everything went wrong between him and the Celtics and how he became toxic in that locker room, I found it cheap. I'm sure that it hurt, and he mentioned in the press conference, Chris, that it was a major loss for him, and it hurt. Like, we get it, you know, but I don't know. Like, I found it cheap because with the Celtics, you had a guy that still is looked at as one of the marquee players of the last 15, 20 years, and Isaiah Thomas lose his sister and then come back and play a day after her death through literal tears. And he played until, you know, his injuries caught up with him, and that was it. Like, that guy, like, embodied so many things that Boston sports fans love about Boston sports, right? And toughness and playing through adversity. Yeah. And he actually did it. and played like a professional. Whereas Kyrie Irving, a year later, or near a year later, is using this as an excuse. I find it cheap because for those of us that doubt it, myself included, well, I don't care that I look like a bad guy doing that, but it's a shield more than anything else. It's like, well, I'm gonna, yes, it hurt, and yes, I had to deal with this, but if I bring it up now, well, nobody can really say anything bad about me because what was I to do? It was such a difficult thing for me to deal with. It was a death. It was something that was tragic and hurt my family and me personally, so there was nothing I can do. And how dare you actually doubt that this was something that affected me personally, and it's why the team and me and the team ended up not meshing last year and everything went sideways. Like, I find that so low. I really do.
Yeah, I would say that I think there was another way you could have said it. You know, you could have said, look, I was struggling personally and professionally last year, and the two things bled into each other, and I shouldn't have let that happen, but it did. And I think instead he sort of presented it, like you said, as an excuse. And that's my thing with Kyrie, is that he's so close so many times. Like, you know, this quote, I failed my teammates in the sense that I didn't give them everything that I could have.
Actually, let's hear that.
Okay, yeah.
I failed those guys in a sense that I didn't give them everything that I could have during that season, especially with the amount of pieces that we had. So my relationships with them personally were great. But in terms of me being a leader in that environment and bringing everyone together, I failed. So, you know, for me, it's like it's just a huge learning experience just to slow down and acknowledge that I'm human in all this. And then also take my steps going forward of reaching out to Danny and talking to those guys and Wick and reaching out to them and letting them know, hey, look, basketball can end tomorrow. I care about you guys as a human being. I know this is a competitive environment, but let's move past this and let's go forward. Marcus, Terry, all those guys just want to be great. You know, we were all internally trying to be great. And I don't think we were trying to be great as a team to meet at the top.
Yeah. And so I look at it and I'm like, okay, great. He's taking responsibility. Way to go, Kyrie. And it's like, oh, you just can't do it all the way, can you? There always has to be some equivocation, some qualifier in there that takes the full blame off you. I mean, he said the words, I failed. I failed as a leader. I mean, that's all true. It's honest. It's the one thing you really wanted to hear. It's like Brad Stevens after the loss in the playoffs to the Bucks saying, I did a bad job. You know how I feel about that. I did a bad job. The story of the 2018-19 Boston Celtics. There it is from Kyrie. But then he has to wrap it in his bereavement and sort of say, you know, this is one of the reasons I did a bad job. And it's like, oh, you know, it's like you said, you can't really, I would never begrudge anybody grieving the loss of a loved one. I completely understand that. But at the same time, I look at it and I feel like, it's a little disingenuous because I think if they had had a great season and gone on to win the whole championship, he would have said, you know, I dedicate this to my grandfather, right?
Yeah.
It would have been framed differently. And I don't deny for a second that he was grieving. But what I would say is I don't think that that was the only issue with his leadership. And I don't even think it was the primary issue with his leadership last year. I think the primary issue is that he's a different kind of cat. And I think it's hard to be a different kind of cat and be a leader. I've said this before. You can't be a loner or an individualist and be a leader. You have to be able to relate to other people and allow other people to relate to you. And I think he struggles with that. I think one of the reasons he ended up in Brooklyn was he realized he could share. The burden of leadership could be shared, and that's easier for him because he's not the type of person or personality who feels comfortable doing it himself.
And he struggles with it because he's such a blowhard. Like, listening to that again, because not much has changed from how, like, he still puts, you know, he starts that comment that we just played off, like, yeah. I failed as a leader. But he still, towards the end, like, he still puts it on the kids. And I hear it, and I tell, like, the first thing I'm reminded of is Edward James Olmos, and when he's pretending to be, like, stand and deliver. It's like, yes. Oh, how do I reach these kids?
How do I reach these kids?
That's Kyrie. That's what he's still doing. He did it last year, and he was doing it again.
How do I reach these kids?
I know, Kyrie. The burden is on you. And so now, it's not like it's nonstop veterans that he's going to be playing with the Brooklyn Nets. It's, okay, you have Durant with you that can help take some of that burden off of your shoulders of how, but I don't know if you have some troubles between you and Caris LeVert.
How do I reach these kids?
I know, Kyrie, it's going to be so difficult. Oh, he's just the worst. I'll tell you more than anything else, because we'll still hear from him time to time, and it'll be, you know, people will be geeked up and pumped up for that game the night before Thanksgiving when it's Celtics and Nets and he has to come back here. And we'll see if he actually plays in it, because Lord knows he played, once in Cleveland?
Yeah, when he threw the alley-oop to Gordon Hayward. Yeah. I'm not saying it's his fault, but the one time he did play is the time you wish he hadn't.
But more than anything else, and I don't know how you feel, McCone, I'm just so happy that this guy's, like, out of our lives. it got so burdensome, I think, for us and doing the Sports Up Celtics show, Chris.
Like, I miss him.
Towards the end, like, oh, I oh, just towards the end, I was like, oh, enough. Just leave. We know you're leaving. You, get the hell
you know
out
me.
Of here.
I kind of like a drama queen.
Yeah, you do.
I do. Yeah.
No one loves talent more than I do. That's why I wanted Antonio Brown on the Patriots. But I've never seen a situation that's going to be addition by subtraction more than Kyrie Irving out the door for the Celtics. Like, I was over him by the All-Star break, and now to see that, I mean, that press conference just shows me nothing's changed. And in Brooklyn, in, you know, 18 months, it's going to be the same exact thing. The funniest part of that press conference was him saying he's going to end his career with Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. Like, there's 0% chance that happens.
I'll say this, though. You guys are saying, you know, it's going to be the same, and how does he reach the kids in Brooklyn and all that. The difference with Brooklyn, and he talked about this in this press conference, and I don't know if we have this cut. I don't want to ambush B-Rob, but he mentioned Joe Harris. And Joe Harris was a guy who said, oh, you know, I played with this guy in Cleveland. He couldn't play on our team. There wasn't a role for him, but I knew he could be like a player. I think that that was a tacit message from him saying, here's a guy that knows his place. Because he specifically mentioned, I knew this guy could be a piece on a championship team. Versus I think he looked at Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and even to a degree Rozier and said, these guys want to be all-stars. They want to be guys in the league who are recognized individually. I think he feels like the guys who are already on the Nets, like Joe Harris, like Jarrett Allen, even Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, are more willing to embrace being role players and sort of quote-unquote know their place. Whereas I think he felt like the guys last year didn't know their place and were trying to be something they weren't or thought they had reached a level that they hadn't because they went to the Eastern Conference Finals without Kyrie. And looking back on the whole thing, Kyrie gets the lion's share of the blame. But I blame the whole franchise because we talked about the Cleveland Browns earlier buying their own hype. I thought the Celtics, as an organization, top to bottom, bought their own hype after reaching that Eastern Conference Finals in 2018 because they could have made moves. You could have dealt Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard. You could have, and they were like, nope, we have this core. We have this team. We're loaded. We're like a dream team. And they just didn't realize that the pieces didn't fit. You had too many guys that wanted to be stars and not enough guys willing to sacrifice. You had young guys that you were projecting to make a leap who didn't, like Jason Tatum. And everybody just sort of bought into their own hype. And that contributed to this, too. It wasn't just Kyrie.
All right, you want to weigh in on this conversation? In Kyrie's press conference yesterday, he just wants to reach these kids. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls coming up in our long commercial-free segment. Next, Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I failed those guys.
How do I reach these kids?
Marcus, Terry, all those guys just want to be great.
How do I reach these kids?
Is your problem now, Brooklyn? Ugh. It's just, and he fancies himself as just the smartest guy in the room. That hasn't changed at all.
That's true.
Oh, what a pud.
I mean, he does like to hear himself talk, and he thinks that everything he's saying is pertinent and deep and philosophical and, you know, just something that resonates on a deeper level than it really does.
He's the all-knowing Oracle. He's Kyrie Irving.
The Eye of Providence, which he has on all his stuff. On his shoe, on that blazer at the All-Star game.
Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So your thoughts on Kyrie's press conference. Just, quickly, too. Did you see the new court, the new floor they have?
I didn't see it, no.
Oh, so it's like almost like gunmetal gray. It's like a completely new look. It actually looks kind of awesome.
Really?
It's a good fit. If you've ever been in the Barclays Center or you just watch a game anyway, it's very dark in there. It's kind of like what the Garden is like now with the new black
seats.
Theater
seating almost.
The floor that they have in Brooklyn now looks pretty damn cool. So I'll give them that. Cam and Taunton, what did you make of Kyrie yesterday?
First of all, Jimmy, I mean, I don't know if you follow this guy on Instagram, but he's been posting like these great philosophy quotes all summer long about how he's a deep thinker. I'm so happy this guy is not our problem anymore. And I defended him most of last year, but when I saw him quit in that Milwaukee series, that's what he did. He quit in that playoff series. 100%. That's when I wrote this guy off. And, I mean, I understand. We've all been there. We've all dealt with the loss of a loved one. And it's awful, and it hurts, and it never goes away. But you have to move forward with your life. It doesn't excuse you quitting on your team in the postseason the way you did in submarining a series. I mean, Jim, after game one, I thought they were going to the finals, didn't you, against Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah, no. I at the time, waved the white flag because that was a complete and thorough ass-kicking. And everything I felt about the team and mocking, they flipped the switch, it felt like they did. And then they got their asses kicked in four straight and it was over.
I mean, it was all him. I mean, with each game, he got worse. He submarined an entire season in which, if it turns out, you could have won a championship because of what happened to Golden State in the finals. The guy is one of the biggest villains in Boston sports history, and nothing he can say will change that.
Oh, no doubt. And that's why that's going to be a tough ticket that night, the game the night before Thanksgiving. And then, keeping in mind, he only played that one time in Cleveland, so who knows if he even plays, but... That's a guy that you know ain't getting the montage. You know, the Celtics are always quick to give a, you know, the welcome back montage to a former player. Right.
Gigi Datome was there.
But he ain't getting it because they're right to feel burned by this guy. Dave in Brooklyn on Kyrie Irving. Hey, Dave.
Guys, can I just real quick defend Kyrie Irving for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
And can I ask you something, Mike? What do you want him to do?
Talk like a normal human being?
His grandfather dies of Vikings disease. What do you want him to do? I mean, dance for you? What do you want?
I'm not going to speak for Jim, but I would say just overall, I would say just take responsibility and accountability completely for your failures as a leader last year and for creating an environment, which people over there have said, where people were walking on eggshells and didn't know sort of what to expect. You know, I mean, I think that's what people are looking for, is for him to take responsibility without equivocation and without qualifiers. I think that's what people want.
Yeah, just some accountability. Just own it. And he doesn't. And he just.
Came so close, but that's the thing that's frustrating about him. You know, he's right there. And then he just can't bring himself to do it all the way.
Josh in Haverhill on Kyrie. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Murray, Gasper, and McBone. I was just going to say, Murray, I agree with you. The black cloud is gone, man. Kyrie's gone. It's great. I think it's going to work out better for basketball reasons, too. I know there's a lot of talk about Kemba Walker being a real ISO-type player, but I think he's really going to adapt to the team mindset. He seems like when he came in, I mean, you can't really judge everyone on their opening press conference, as we know, but he came in, he seems like he's going to be a real good team player.
My one fear on this, though, and I will say this, you know, look, I know everybody's saying addition by subtraction. It was a 49-win team, and I wrote that it was the most disappointing, maddening, frustrating team in Boston sports, you know, since the 2011 Red Sox. And I believe that. However, this assumption that suddenly you take Kyrie Irving away and all their problems are fixed, I'm not buying it. And anybody who watched any of the basketball World Cup, I don't see how you could possibly say that when your Celtics were at the core of a team that finished seventh in that particular competition. And honestly, a lot of it looked like Kemba Walker in Charlotte, which is normally about where they would finish when they make the playoffs, seventh or eighth. It looked pretty similar. So you need Jason Tatum to take a step forward. You obviously need Jaylen Brown to take a step forward. Let's see what Gordon Hayward is coming back. I don't think just pulling away Kyrie Irving suddenly makes you a championship contender and 10 wins better. The other guys have to take some responsibility too, and they have to improve. And I remember talking to somebody over there after the season ended, and they said, yeah, you know, Kyrie was difficult, but it wasn't just him. Those young guys didn't want to be criticized. And so I think the young guys had an agenda too. And let's see what their agenda is this year, and let's see what the ratio is of agenda versus improvement, because it needs to be a lot more improvement than agenda, and that wasn't the case last year.
And so it was, what, four Celtics on that U.S. team?
Four Celtics on that team. It was Smart, Tatum, Brown, Kemba.
We have Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, covers the Celtics for BostonSportsJournal.com, producing the show. It's been a minute since we've had you here, B-Rob. Hi. Did this leave as bad a taste in your mouth as it did to Chris Gasper? Because I know you, like Gasper, actually watch these games, because I wasn't doing that. It's on too early in the morning, and I certainly don't care about world basketball. But it is four Celtics, and I don't know. I just feel like the expectations are, I'm one of these people, like, at least you're going to get a better product. You'll get more effort. Night in, night out, which you certainly didn't get with last year's Celtics teams. But do you watch that, what happened, and them losing to teams like France, and feel like, this team might actually kind of suck this year?
Yeah, they're not going to suck, Jim, but you worry, like, it's this team, and you also lost Al Horford, too.
Great point.
And the uncertainty of the front court rotation is a whole other, you know, can of worms. But yeah, like, in that France game when they lost, Kemba was terrible in that fourth quarter because he just kept going to the rim and then was blocked by like Rudy Gobert over and over. And again, that's the kind of stuff that got him into trouble in the regular season. So Tatum was out for that game. So that's kind of, you know, you can handle the silver lining there. But no, this could be like a 45 to 47 win team if this, you know, if things go south here.
And so I know Jimmy Stewart brought this up during Felgren Maz this week too. Like, is defense going to be an issue? Because he's like, outside of Smart, who's going to play defense?
I mean, Cantor is a great defender. I don't know if you guys have seen him. No.
Yeah, right. Worst defending big man in the league.
Right. You hope Robert Williams makes a big jump there, Jim, I feel like. Poirier, the guy coming over from France, looked pretty decent at times, so you hope there. And then, again, the buy-in, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Hayward. We know they can play good defense when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple years ago. Can they kind of lock back into that mode? I don't know, Chris. Like, do you feel like those guys have learned a lesson here, like, after how this went?
I mean, I hope so. You know, some of them, I mean, I think what people who are really bullish about the team are banking on, they're saying, okay, Kyrie was kind of like the governor on these guys, and they felt like they couldn't reach their full potential or whatever, and they had to sacrifice, and they really didn't want to. They weren't buying into it. Now maybe they won't have to sacrifice as much, but then I kind of look at it, and I'm like, well, look at Kemba's usage rate. Look at how many shots he takes. Like, the one guy in the league who took more shots last year was Harden. Kemba's a volume scorer. He's a really good player, but he needs shots to be effective. So I don't know. I don't look at it and think, oh, my God, now all of a sudden there's all these shots that are freed up, especially if Hayward comes back and is, you know, not the shell of himself that he was last year. So I just don't know if those guys are willing to sacrifice and if they can be, you know, more effective and more efficient. You know, I think they need to be more effective with fewer opportunities. And I think that was a real struggle last year.
Tyler in Canton on the Celtics. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, yeah, I know you guys are wrapping around it. One, Jim, I'd like to start out. I can't wait till the radio station smartens up and gives you your own afternoon program. I love you to death. But I know you guys are touching on the Celtics chemistry and whatnot. Can anything be gleaned from their time together in China? Just the whole idea of, you know, agenda versus success. Can they all, at least those four guys, talk about it? And does Gordon Hayward still become the odd man out because he wasn't there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, unfortunately, the whole thing kind of got short-circuited. I mean, Tatum got hurt. Marcus Smart was battling injuries. I thought, you know, Jaylen Brown was pretty solid when he played, but I don't really think they established any great chemistry due to the injuries there. And obviously, the team didn't perform well. And I'm really intrigued. I don't know what you think, B-Rob, but I'm really intrigued to see how the team plays because I look at it and it's like, if Hayward's back, I feel like Brad's going to give him the ball a lot. He did it last year in terms of being a decision maker and a facilitator and initiator for that offense. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not so certain that there's going to be more opportunities necessarily for Jaylen Brown or for Tatum to sort of do their thing. They're going to have to learn to play off the ball and get their points.
Yeah, no question about it, Chris. And I'm fascinated. Like, who's going to start? Like, yeah. Who are you bringing off the bench here? Like,
same issues.
Like, Brad had, this was tough last year. You start 10-10, kind of the whole season went into the, you know, downhill early, which, again, places the priority now. Like, you want to start things right. So who's going to buy in? Who's going to be willing to come off the bench? I think you can make a case for Jaylen, Smart, or Hayward in that capacity. And then I did like overseas, Chris, like, Jaylen Brown at the four. He looks pretty good down there, like, yeah, doing more dirty work and stuff. I think that's going to be pretty huge for this team if he can do that again.
Couple open lines you want to join us, 617-779-0985. It's our long commercial-free segment here. Tim McCone is going to get you caught up with the sports headlines, and we'll get right back to you. And then we've now just got it stuck in my head, Chris, as we typically don't do this, but like we usually have college games on, but on one of the TVs, it's The Dark Knight Returns, the most overrated of all the Batman movies, only good for the first hour. Chris loves my stupid Bane impersonation. Fantastic. But you pointed out something, again, during this last commercial break about Bane and what his real motives are. And now I can't stop thinking about it. So we'll touch on that as well after the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone here on Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.